Blow the horn. Go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast with Tom and Dave. And today we're talking about Alabama's 48-3 dismantling of the Spartans from San Jose State. A 45-point margin doesn't really do justice to the nature of the game. Let's just say the Tide beat down the Spartans like a narc at a biker rally. That either leaves us with very little to elaborate on or many points upon which we want to expand. So Tom, relative to today's game, what jumped out to you? And hey, spare me the headlines. I want to hear the good stuff.
Dave, what jumped out to me is that we were able to put our foot on their throat, keep it on their throat, while playing a lot of people. You know, Nick Saban has always been very consistent with players being able to keep up their intensity, keep up their mental focus through for four quarters of football. And we were able to do that, and we played 47 players in the first quarter.
47 players, is that really a big deal in the first quarter? I'm thinking 11 offense, 11 defense, 11 special teams. You're going to punt once. That's 34. You're going to play a nickel. You're going to play a dime, two tights, three wides, four wides, five wides. I mean, that's 40 guys. Is that really a big deal?
It is. Alabama teams in the past, we have not had the depth to be able to play our backups on special teams. We have had to look for our starters on offense and defense to take those roles. And so we'd be lucky to play 25, 30 guys in the first quarter, much less the first half. And we played almost double that just in the first quarter alone. And the other thing, too, is historically the more players that we have played, there has been a drop-off. The less we've been able to hold teams down, and the less we've been able to put teams away. And so it's made it a very close game throughout four quarters of football, which has just been gut-wrenching.
We were able to finish early today, is that what you're saying?
Very much so. Very much so.
All right. Hey, one of the things that jumped out to me was our secondary today, and I think there's really two points I want to amplify. And one is formation related. We seem to play a lot of what I would call Tampa 2 or maybe a modified Tampa 2, and that's essentially an inverted backfield where your corners are up on the line playing more press man and your safeties are back splitting the deep middle. And, you know, we've played that before, but not nearly as much as we played that today. It seemed to be quite the predominant. We talked about our base defense, and that seemed to be something of a base setup in our defensive backfield. I wonder if we're not doing that, knowing that we have young and inexperienced cornerbacks, and we're putting the safeties back there in that deep coverage to you know, maybe provide some extra coverage if they do miss at the line. And then just speaking of the cornerbacks, in total, you know, I agree we did play a lot of guys over the course of the game. I don't know if, you know, 47 in the first quarter is a lot, but we did play a lot over the course of the game. And we played actually six cornerbacks. And I thought that was interesting. We seemed to, I'm sure there's some walk-ons and younger guys on the bench, but we seemed to drain our reservoir of cornerbacks. And it was interesting to me, the rotation, in that Dre, Kirkpatrick, I don't think there's any surprise there that he was our starter. But Menzi coming off an Achilles injury, and Milliner, a true freshman, he participated in spring drills, but as a true freshman, those were the lead three. I thought that was pretty interesting.
No, it was. And McKenzie, you know, for him to be able to make the plays that he made today, he showed great speed in being able to, you know, run a guy down, you know, from across the field. That, you know, for him to be able to do that after coming off of an Achilles injury so recently is huge for this team.
He may have been touched by Tebow, right?
maybe so. I think a bigger story, though, is that B.J. Scott was not – that you didn't even mention B.J. Scott in those top three. B.J. Scott just –
He was the fourth.
Yeah, but he was supposed to be the number two. I mean, we thought Dre was going to be the number one, but B.J. Scott was supposed to be the other guy. He had, you know, a top five-star recruit. He redshirted last year so he could learn the defensive scheme. We were really counting on him – you know, to be that number two cornerback. Yeah, we talked about, you know, Menzie. If Menzie was able to come to Alabama, he might take over that from B.J. Scott. But we really thought that was going to be B.J. Scott's role. And then you got a guy like Phelan Jones, who's transferred here from LSU, a top recruit. I mean, he played as a true freshman in LSU's scheme, and yet he's our number five cornerback. So you've got two guys who are highly recruited who are sitting here backing up a true freshman and a JUCO.
Yeah, and John, just to round out the six, John Fulton, the sixth cornerback, he played a lot on special teams and came in late at the cornerback. I don't think there's a surprise there, him being a true freshman, that he was the sixth in the order. I think he has a lot of talent and upside for
us. He even made a bite, though. He even made a play on the ball and almost had a pick.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see as the season rolls out, you know, how this rotation evolves. And I think that it will, and I think that'll be fun to watch as the season plays out.
No, it will. And, you know, another thing that I saw tonight, or I guess I didn't see that I wanted to see from, you know, what we talked about a week ago, was I wanted to see consistent pressure on the quarterback from our front four. This was the time for our front seven to step up. Yes, Marcell Darius wasn't there tonight, but we've got a slew of talented players that we talked about last week that I expected to see bigger things from, and we really didn't see it tonight.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think we went vanilla. We were straight vanilla. We didn't stunt. We didn't blitz hardly the entire game. I'm not that surprised that we didn't get that much pressure on them.
I understand, but it was San Jose State. I mean, this is a team coming into the game that had a brand new starting left tackle, had a right tackle that only had 5 starts last year. This is a team that gave up 34 sacks last year alone. And so for us to not to be able to get any pressure at all, I mean, the only sack that we got in the game came from our safety on a blitz situation. And so that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on as we go forward.
All right. Maybe we weren't just vanilla. Maybe we were soft serve. All right. You know, I think the next thing that I saw that I want to spend a minute with is Julio Jones and his usage tonight. And I think it'd be remiss if I didn't point out the catch, the one-handed leaping grab that he made in the end zone. That was a fantastic catch, and that may be the best of Julio we've seen since the blackout in Georgia. That was just one spectacular catch that he made. But in terms of how we used him tonight, I was a little bit disappointed. I was disappointed that we saw him back returning punts. I was disappointed that we saw him back returning kicks. It's not that I dislike the guy. I love Julio Jones. I just think that he has been somewhat fragile. I know he's a tough guy at a receiver, but he's been somewhat fragile. And us using him in those ways, I just think, makes him a little more vulnerable. We did use him on an end-around, so we did run him. And so we did 3 of the things that I don't want to see him do. We did all 3. And what's interesting, speaking of Julio being a little bit fragile, after one of his catches, and I've not read this, we've looked on the internet reading some of the post-game stuff, and I've not seen this anywhere, but I specifically, with my own eyes through the binoculars, watched him get up from a catch, shake his arm, shake his elbow and hand, flex his hand, go directly to the sidelines, and spend time with the trainer working on his arm, working on his elbow, and he didn't come back into the game. And so that's going to be an interesting storyline that we'll need to keep track of as this week evolves, and maybe we'll see some print on that from official sources as the week goes on.
Well, hopefully we find out it's something that they can just work on it this week, and that, you know, we'll have him for Penn State.
So. Yeah, hopefully there's a reason it's not in print already.
No, for sure. Another thing that I kind of focused on tonight, which was good to see, was we got to see a backup quarterback in the game. It was late in the year and few and far between that we got to see Star Jackson last year. And so to see A.J. McCarron come in as early as he did, you know, he came in at one point in the second quarter, and his first two plays that they gave, you know, that they called for him were passing plays. You know, he comes in, he's 2 for 2 for 40 yards, including a 29-yard touchdown to Julio. That's huge for this team, is that they had the confidence in this kid as our backup quarterback. Obviously, he's our future. But when's the last time that we saw a backup quarterback for Alabama come in the game in the second quarter, much less the fourth quarter, and not be handing the ball off to a running back?
Yeah, there's a couple of points that you could chase on there, right? A second string quarterback playing that early in the game because we want him to, throwing the ball on his first play in and throwing for a touchdown. I think, yeah, you're absolutely onto something. I think McCarron certainly demonstrated some skill tonight, and I think he has some upside for us. One of the things that impressed me with his play tonight is that he just seemed to throw a nice ball is really the only expression that I can think to encapsulate it. The ball just seemed to arrive at the receiver's hand, and it was a soft catch, and it was easy for them to just pluck it out of the air, and the ball just arrived in their hands in a very catchable manner. I think McCarron has just tons of upside for us. One of the maybe the third point that I want to amplify that I saw in watching the game is DJ Fluker. I think it was fair that we redshirted him last year. I think that was the right answer, and this is certainly his first year starting. He only played on the offensive line 1 year in high school, and so the offensive line, especially at the SEC level, is still new to him, and so I'm not harping on the guy at all. I think he has a ton of upside, and he's going to be a great player for us. But I did notice a couple of times tonight, especially in pass coverage, and even a couple of times in run blocking, where he just seemed to need an assist. There was one run that Trent Richardson had. It was really the most spectacular run that Trent had, where he ran to the right, cut back across the field, and ran for a 40-some-odd yard touchdown. What I happened to watch in that play and the play before, I was specifically watching DJ. He was one of the players of interest that I had. And on the play just before the Trent run for the touchdown, I think we ran the exact same play. The alignment was a little different, but we ran Trent off tackle the same side, and DJ seemed to have trouble getting to the second level, and then Trent was tackled. It was probably a 2-yard gain. On the very next play, we moved the tight end over to sort of flank DJ and give him some additional coverage, and that helped the blocking there on the right side, and Trent runs for that touchdown. Look, I think that's going to be interesting to watch his development.
No, it is, and I mean, think about it. Mark Ingram goes down with a minor knee injury, as we are being told, and Trent Richardson has to step up on a spotlight as the starter. He showed he was a very capable backup, but his number got called just a few days ago. And here's a guy on, he did a couple really great things tonight. There was that one play where, McElroy was scrambling, and he sits there and shovels the ball to Trent Richardson. It's a 1-yard shovel. Almost he's an extended handoff. And the next thing you know, Trent Richardson takes off and he's down the sideline, gets to the 3-yard line, and is trying to carry 6 people into the end zone.
Trent just seemed to hit the turbo boost button when McElroy, and hats off to McElroy for reading down the field and knowing where he was relative to the line of scrimmage and getting that ball off. But Trent seemed to hit full speed in like a step and a half. That was impressive.
Yeah, and just for, suddenly it was a 20-yard play. And that's just something that you saw from Ingram last year. And the other thing, kind of back to what we were talking earlier about players, is this guy is the guy that you're counting on tonight to be the guy. But yet he only had 9 carries. He had 7 of those carries by half. If you count even his punt returns, etc., he only had like 12, 13 touches. But he accounted for 150 or some odd all-purpose yards.
Yeah, the broadcast team during the game, I was listening to the radio during the game, and the broadcast team made a point of saying, the San Jose defenders must be thinking, gosh, there's Trent Richardson, obviously, who's came in and played well, and Eddie Lacy ran for 100-plus yards, 2 touchdowns. Demetrius Gould was playing fantastic. Oh, and their Heisman Trophy winner didn't play?
Yeah, no, really, and think about it. I mean, Trent Richardson had 9 touches, and 2 of those was for touchdowns. What Alabama teams in the past would we lose our starting tailback and the guy who comes in not have to carry the rock 30 times?
Exactly. I agree. We did play a lot, and we saw certainly some skill in the players that did play. Tommy, let's move to our game balls, and I'm going to do this with a little twist. It's easy to give game balls, right, because all you have to do is read the headlines. We're going to do this a little different. We're going to give mini game balls.
Okay.
It's sort of the maybe the player behind the curtain that played really well, that's not going to garner the headlines. Maybe they're page 2 type players, but who's someone that popped in your eyes that's not going to get all the accolades of the stars?
That would have to be Robert Lester. I mean, we had 7 new starters on defense. We talked last week about the youth in the secondary and how they were going to have to step up. We talked about what happened with the likes of Robbie Green. And Robert Lester is a guy who's been in the system for 3 years. He's had plenty of time to learn Saban's scheme. He's not going to show up on the stat sheet tonight. He actually only has 2 line items on the stat sheet. but one was the only sack that the Alabama defense recorded, and the other one was a pick. And so for him to only have two plays, but they were the two biggest defensive plays of the ball game for a, you know, first-time starter at safety, huge.
He's a star in a big play league, right?
Very much so.
I give my mini game ball, I'm sticking with the defense as well, to C.J. Mosley. He's a freshman linebacker. Dude's a stud. He played really early, and he's certainly played often tonight. He played ahead of players like Nico Johnson and Tana Patrick and Jonathan Atchison that are certainly acclaimed players in their own right. And gosh, CJ played very, very well. He nearly intercepted a ball, and he recorded 7 tackles, which actually led the team tonight.
It did.
Absolutely. CJ, I think, is going to be a beast for us. So, Tommy, you know, we've stepped through some of our key observations. We've awarded a couple mini game balls. If you were to encapsulate the game tonight, what's your takeaway?
It has to be the number of players that we were able to play without a drop-off. I mean, this is just something that has not been characteristic of Alabama teams for many years now. We've talked about depth. We talked about the ability to have these guys step up as juniors that no one had heard about. They've dropped off the radar. I mean, this is so huge for recruiting. I mean, for Coach Saban to be able to go into these living rooms and tell these players, you are going to be able to play if you have the talent to get on the field. You know, I guess the first guy that comes to mind has to be Trent Richardson. I mean, whenever it came down to getting Trent Richardson, it was down to us in Florida. And we had Mark Ingram at the time, and we had Glenn Coffey, who had just come off of a great year. Mm-hmm. And Trent Richardson could have very easily gone to the Florida Gators and been their feature tailback. He could have been their go-to guy last year, and what does he do? He comes to Alabama, plays as a backup, scores 2 touchdowns in the national championship game. I mean, if that's not a story for recruiting, I mean, that's how he's going to be able to keep rebuilding these recruiting classes, you know, on a year-in, year-out basis.
Saban's not blowing smoke when he says if you're talented enough to play, you'll play.
Right, right. I mean, we won't see 20 guys this year. We might see 5 or 10, but just the depth this team is building is scary.
But we'll see them. Fair enough. My takeaway, really what I take away is something I carry into the game, and that's a confidence in our talent and our depth. It's not dissimilar from your point. Just a couple of years ago, it felt like our season was lost when, you know, our redshirt freshman nose guard, Brian Motley, you know, broke his hand and missed time. It just seemed like the season, it was very deflating. It seemed like the season was lost.
You know, he had been our offensive lineman.
He had bounced around, exactly, but he had performed like a stud in a scrimmage and recorded a number of tackles, and we were weak on the defensive front. And that was just very deflating when he went out. And you just suppose that with just this week alone, Ingram goes down with an injury. Marcel Darius is confirmed suspended for 2 games. And, oh well, we'll win with who we have. And those are, you know, Byron Motley's a great guy, but he's not a Marcel Darius. And relative to the team, he's not a Mark Ingram. And we lose those guys for this week and next week potentially with Mark. And I'm very confident that we're going to go into certainly tonight and next week as well, and we're going to win whether those guys play or not. The season's not lost.
No, they've got the confidence to know. I mean, tonight is a huge confidence builder for this team, that they were able to put up 48 points, 600 yards of offense, and hold their opponents to 3 points without arguably their best offensive and defensive player.
Hey, Tommy, I'm going to rant on the world of college football. Is that okay?
Go right ahead.
All right. And my first target tonight is Boise State. I just want to be very clear here. Boise State is a cute upstart team, and it's fun when they're over their skis and they're beating other teams in BCS bowl games, but and they're beating them with a little razzle-dazzle backyard-type plays. But as a national title contender, Boise State is a fraud. Since 2002, the Smurfs are 6-7 against BCS conference teams, and nearly all of these matchups have been season starters or bowl games, each affording multiple weeks of preparation. In this circumstance, of course, they can occasionally be a winner, under 50% so far, but still, in under those circumstances, they can occasionally win. But in a legitimate conference like the SEC, with week-to-week-to-week-to-week true competition, trying your depth and resolve, they're a 7-win team. End of story. The next item I want to spend a minute with is BYU. Mountain West, WAC, whatever. The recent attempt at conference jumping, it's one stinky pot to the next. Anyone thinking different needs to watch a month's worth of Saturdays of SEC games to see if they can keep up with the ball. The action is just that much faster. Bottom line is this, write it down. BYU is going independent because they want to join the Pac-10. And the only path to that end is to bathe the stinky conference stench from their resume. All right, I'll step off my pulpit. Tommy, next week's Penn State, what you got?
I think we're going to continue to see this offense mature, expand the playbook. You know, a lot of people out there are like, whoa, you know, same old story. Alabama offense is going to become a juggernaut. We had 600 yards of offense tonight. Yes, it was San Jose State. We're not going to put up 48 points. But I think we're going to win like a 30-21, 30-23 ball game. We're going to keep their offense on their heels. We're going to force them into obvious passing situations, which is going to continue to help our young secondary. I think we'll see a couple picks next week, and hopefully we'll be able to get more than one sack.
They got a freshman quarterback that looked pretty decent tonight. I think we'll stack up against the run and Evan Royster. Do you think they score 20 points on us?
I think it's possible that they can put up a couple touchdowns. Maybe a turnover, you know, is possible that might get them to 20. I think 20 is a stretch. You know, I mean, I guess another question for you is this quarterback mobile? You know, is this person going to be able to run the ball? I mean, tonight's quarterback, there was no threat to run, and yet we still only got one sack. And so I haven't focused on this guy. Is this guy able to run the ball?
I'm going to have to study tape on that one. But I tell you, I see a 31-13 ball game.
Well, I'll stick with my 30-21, 30-23.
Very good. All right, thanks. And this has been another episode of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
All right.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
All right.
Email us at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
All right.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
All right.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
There's some place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Rose!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guys we're playing against and make us ask to win. That's our trademark. That's our MO.